Sean Fuhring tells a story of one time when he had a really severe headache. It went on for weeks and weeks. He tried Western medicine, didn't work. Thai medicine, didn't work. Chinese medicine, didn't work. It got so bad that he had to have other monks staying with him at night in case he woke up in the middle of the night in a lot of pain. They could give him hot compresses, other things to help alleviate some of the pain, but still the pain was insistent. Until one night he woke up, and all the monks who were looking after him were fast asleep. The first thought that went through his mind was, who is looking after whom here? But he said as long as he was awake, he should get up and meditate. So he meditated for a while, and suddenly realized he'd been doing everything he could to get rid of the pain. Whereas the Buddha taught that pain, suffering, was something to be comprehended. So he changed his approach. He tried to comprehend exactly what was the suffering. And he said he was able to attain something he'd never attained before in his meditation that night. The important being that what he had learned in the Dhamma and basic textbooks came in handy, turned him in the right direction, which is a sign that an important part of being a meditator, important part of practicing, is knowing how to read and how to use what you've read. Because there are lots of ways of using what you've read that are going to get in the way. And there are ways that can actually be helpful. One of the prime uses of reading the Dhamma is that it gives you a vocabulary. It's like the vocabulary that professional tasters and professional scent experts develop. The more refined the vocabulary, the more precise the vocabulary, then the more sensitive they are to how things smell, how things taste. And it's the same with your own mind. The Buddha provides a very clear vocabulary for what's going on inside the mind in terms of feelings and perceptions, thought fabrications, acts of consciousness, and all the other many elaborations on those basic terms. It's good to have them in the back of the mind. Like what he has to say about fabrication, the three kinds of fabrication, independent, co-arising. We tend to think of dependent co-arising as something too abstract to get our heads around. But it's better to look at it as a list of possibilities. Have working knowledge of what the terms mean. And then as you're working with your meditation, you'll come across the fact that you're actually doing something that's described by those terms. And then you're going to ask yourself, what do those terms do to help illuminate what you're doing? One thing, of course, is that they illuminate what might be causing what you're doing. The list of causes may be complex, but it's not random. And one of the lessons you learn from looking at dependent co-arising is that feeling occurs many places. It is associated with many different things. So when there's a pain in the body, or when there's a feeling of pleasure in the body or in the mind, there's a variety of things that you can question. How is it related to these other aspects of what's going on in the mind? Because sometimes, say, a pain might be bothering you because of a perception. Well, feeling and perceptions are there together in the fact of her fabrication, and they're together in the fact of her name and form. Sometimes the feeling is related to sensory contact. Sometimes it's related to craving. Sometimes it comes about as a result of clinging. So when the pain is bothering you, you can ask yourself, which of these many opportunities or potentials could be a useful way of looking at the pain so you don't have to suffer from the pain. It may require some discursive thinking, and that's perfectly fine, as long as it doesn't discourse too far away what you're actually doing. But you can ask yourself these questions. This is a lot of what the texts are good for, is they spark questions in your mind. I've been looking at some different passages where the Buddha gives a Dharma talk, and the people listening to the talk gain awakening. And I've been struck by how many of those talks involve him asking questions of his listeners. Questions that may not have ever occurred to them before. So the readings are good for giving a vocabulary and then asking questions, giving you an idea of what questions might be useful. So it's important that we not look down on reading. It has its uses. A question came up when I was teaching in France a while back, saying, John Lee, John Cha, they went out in the forest, they didn't have much knowledge of the Dharma, and yet they were able to attain the Dharma. Whereas we're highly educated in the Dharma and it's getting in the way. That's not the case. Both the John Lee and the John Cha read a lot. John Cha spent years studying the Dharma. And John Lee, when he set up the monastery in Chandrabari, became a subscriber to the magazine Dhammacakkhusu, which had translations of suttas, articles on the Dharma. When the monthly issue would arrive, John Fung said that that evening the meditation period would be handed over to John Lee reading the magazine aloud to everybody. So they did get an education. They did find a way of being well read in the Dharma. But the important thing is they learned how to use what they had read. One of the ways of not using what they had read was trying to force things into a mold. You hear that your pain, your sense of your pain should be separate from the sense of the body. You can't just force them to be separate. You can't drive a wedge between the two of them. As John Fuhrer once said, if Nirvana was something we could take by force, we would have all gone there a long time ago. It requires getting the mind really still and seeing what happens when the mind gets really still, being very observant of what happens. And you'll find that things begin to separate out on their own. It's like having a bottle of salad dressing, vinegar and oil. You shake the bottle, and they're going to get mixed. And you can't separate them out. Say pouring part of the mixture into the oil, into an oil bottle and part of the mixture into a vinegar bottle. But when they get still, they separate out on their own. And this is an image that's used a lot in the forest tradition. That a lot of what has to be done is getting the mind really, really still and then observing what happens in the still mind. Because all those factors for dependent core arising are showing themselves. And they show themselves more clearly, more distinctly when the mind is really still. And you see their connections more clearly when the mind is really still. So you have to know, one, how to get the mind still, and two, what to look for when it is still. And John Mahabua points out that one of the ways of getting a pain to separate out from your sense of the body, and the pain is a feeling aggregate. The body, of course, is made up of earth, water, wind, and fire. Those are two very separate things, the feeling of the pain and the sensations of the elements, but we tend to glom them together. and you can't pry them apart. But if you ask questions about the pain, one of which would be, where is the strongest point of the pain, you start chasing it around. You find that the pain separates out on its own. You don't have to separate it out. It just goes out on its own. That's an example of getting a result without forcing it, without pre-designing it, because sometimes it will not separate out as you trace it around. In which case, you have to try another tactic. Because pain is related to lots of different factors in the mind. And you never know which of the many factors that are related to the factor of feeling would be the ones that are in play right now. But if you have a good repertoire of concepts, good vocabulary, and a good series of questions to ask, you can try them all out, see what works, and then you can use your ingenuity. Yes, you begin to gain an intuitive sense for the mind from dealing with it directly. So reading about the Dhamma is an important part of practicing the Dhamma. But the important thing is learning how to use it right. And when to use it, when to put it aside. And John Munn would tell his students to take whatever knowledge they had of the Dhamma and just put it away in a chest. That's because there was so much bad Dhamma being taught back in those days. But it's also because there are times when you just need to get the mind really, really quiet. And then you reflect on what you've got when it's quiet. And that's when you begin to pull out your knowledge to see if it's helpful. So learning from your reading is a skill. It's not something you just force on things. As with all aspects of the practice, you have to see what works and what doesn't work. Get a sense of time and place. And then you find that what you've read can be a great help.